took a Humvee from the MP motor pool and was logged out through the main gate. I found the motel inside 50 minutes. It was 30 miles due north of Fort Byrd through dark, undistinguished North Carolina countryside that was equal parts strip malls and scrubby forest, and what I figured were dormant sweet potato fields. It was all new to me. I had never served there before. The roads were very quiet. Everyone was still inside, partying. I hoped I would be back at Byrd before they all came out and started driving home. Although I really liked the Humvee's chances, head-on against a civilian ride. The motel was part of a knot of low commercial structures clustered in the darkness near a big highway interchange. There was a truck stop as a centerpiece. It had a greasy spoon that was open on the holidays and a gas station big enough to take 18-wheelers. There was a no-name cinderblock lounge bar with lots of neon and no windows. It had an exotic dancer's sign lit up in pink and a parking lot the size of a football field. There were diesel spills and rainbow puddles all over it. I could hear loud music coming out of the bar. There were cars parked three deep all around it. The whole area was glowing sulphurous yellow from the streetlights. The night air was cold and full of fog. The motel itself was directly across the street from the gas station. It was a run-down, swaybacked affair about 20 rooms long. It had a lot of peeling paint. It looked empty. There was an office at the left-hand end with a token vehicle porch and a buzzing Coke machine. First question? Why would a two-star general use a place like this? I was pretty sure there wouldn't have been a DOD inquiry if he had checked into a Holiday Inn. There were two town police cruisers parked at careless angles outside the motel's last but one room. There was a small, plain sedan sandwiched between them. It was cold and misted over. It was a base model Ford, red, four-cylinder. It had skinny tires and plastic hubcaps. A rental, for sure. I put the Humvee next to the right-hand police cruiser and slid out into the chill. I heard the music from across the street, louder. The last but one room's lights were off, and its door was open. I figured the cops were trying to keep the interior temperature low, trying to stop the old guy from getting too ripe. I was anxious to take a look at him. I was pretty sure I had never seen a dead general before. Three cops stayed in their cars, and one got out to meet me. He was wearing tan uniform pants and a short leather jacket zipped to his chin. No hat. The jacket had badges pinned to it that told me his name was Stockton and his rank was deputy chief. He was gray, about 50. He was medium height and a little soft and heavy, but the way he was reading the badges on my coat told me he was probably a veteran, like a lot of cops are.
Major?
He said as a greeting. I nodded. A veteran for sure. A major gets a little gold-colored oak leaf on the epaulette, one inch across, one on each side. This guy was looking upward and sideways at mine, which wasn't the clearest angle of view, but he knew what they were. So he was familiar with rank designations. And I recognized his voice. He was the guy who had called me at 5 seconds past midnight.
"I'm Rick Stockton," he said. "Deputy Chief?"
He was calm. He had seen heart attacks before. "I'm Jack Reacher, MP duty officer tonight." He recognized my voice in turn, smiled.
"You decided to come out, after all."
"You didn't tell me the DOA was a two-star."
"Well, he is."
"I've never seen a dead general."
"Not many people have," he said.
And the way he said it made me think he had been an enlisted man.
"Army?"
I asked.
"Marine Corps. First Sergeant."
"My old man was a Marine," I said. I always make that point, talking to Marines. It gives me some kind of genetic legitimacy. Stops them from thinking of me as a pure Army dog face. But I keep it vague. I don't tell them my old man had made captain. Enlisted men and officers don't automatically see eye to eye.
"Humvee?"
Stockton said. He was looking at my ride.
"You like it?"
he asked. I nodded. Humvee was everyone's best attempt at saying HMMWV, which stands for High Mobility Multipurpose Wheeled Vehicle, which about says it all.
Like the Army generally, what you're told is what you get.
It works as advertised, I said.
Kind of wide, he said. I wouldn't like to drive it in a city.
You'd have tanks in front of you, I said. They'd be clearing the way. I think that would be the basic plan.
The music from the bar thudded on. Stockton said nothing.
Let's look at the dead guy, I said to him. He led the way inside, flicked a switch that lit up the interior hallway, then another that lit up the whole room. I saw a standard motel layout, a yard-wide lobby with a closet on the left and a bathroom on the right, then a 12-by-20 rectangle with a built-in counter the same depth as the closet, and a queen bed the same depth as the bathroom. Low ceiling, a wide window at the far end, draped with an integrated heater-cooler unit built through the wall underneath it. Most of the things in the room were tired and shabby and colored brown. The whole place looked dim and damp and miserable. There was a dead man on the bed. He was naked, face down. He was white, maybe pushing 60, quite tall. He was built like a fading pro athlete, like a coach. He still had decent muscle, but he was growing love handles the way old guys do, however fit they are. He had pale, hairless legs. He had old scars. He had wiry gray hair buzzed close to his scalp and cracked, weathered skin on the back of his neck. He was a type. Any 100 people could have looked at him, and all 100 would have said, Army officer, for sure.
He was found like this, I asked.
Yes, Stockton said. Second question, how? A guy takes a room for the night, he expects privacy until the maid comes in the next morning, at the very least.
How? I said.
How what?
How was he found? Did he call 911?
Nope.
So how?
You'll see.
I paused. I didn't see anything yet. Did you roll him over?
Yep. Then we rolled him back.
Mind if I take a look?
Be my guest.
I stepped to the bed and slipped my left hand under the dead guy's armpit and rolled him over. He was cold and a little stiff. Rigor was just setting in. I got him settled flat on his back and saw four things. First, his skin had a distinctive gray pallor. Second, shock and pain were frozen on his face. Third, he had grabbed his left arm with his right hand up near the bicep. And fourth, he was wearing a condom. His blood pressure had collapsed long ago, and his erection had disappeared, and the condom was hanging off, mostly empty like a translucent flap of pale skin. He had died before reaching orgasm. That was clear.
Heart attack,
Stockton said behind me. I nodded. The gray skin was a good indicator. So was the evidence of shock and surprise and sudden pain in his upper left arm.
Massive, I said. But before or after penetration, Stockton said, with a smile in his voice.
I looked at the pillow area. The bed was still completely made. The dead guy was on top of the bedspread, and the bedspread was still tight over the pillows. But there was a head-shaped dent, and there were creases where elbows and heels had scrabbled and pushed lower down.
She was underneath him when it happened, I said. That's for sure. She had to wrestle her way out. Hell of a way for a man to go.
I can think of worse ways. Stockton just smiled at me.
What? I said.
He didn't answer.
No sign of the woman? Hiding her hair. She ran for it.
The desk guy see her?
Stockton just smiled again. I looked at him. Then I understood.
A low-rent dive near a highway interchange with a truck stop and a strip bar 30 miles north of a military base.
She was a hooker, I said. That's how he was found. The desk guy knew her, saw her running out way too soon, got curious as to why and came in here to check.
Stockton nodded.
He called us right away. The lady in question was long gone by then, of course, and he's denying she was ever here in the first place. He's pretending this isn't that kind of establishment.
Your department had business here before?
Time to time. It is that kind of an establishment, believe me.
Control the situation, Garber had said. Heart attack, right? I said. Nothing more.
Probably, Stockton said. But we'll need an autopsy to know for sure.
The room was quiet. I could hear nothing except radio traffic from the cop cars outside and music from the bar across the street. I turned back to the bed, looked at the dead guy's face. I didn't know him. I looked at his hands. He had a West Point ring on his right and a wedding band on his left. Wide, old, probably 9-carat. His dog tags were hidden under his right arm where he had reached across to grab his left bicep. I lifted the arm with difficulty and pulled the tags out. He had rubber silencers on them. I raised them until the chain went tight against his neck. His name was Kramer, and he was a Catholic, and his blood group was O. We could do the autopsy for you, I said, up at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center.
Out of state?
He's a general.
You want to hush it up?
I nodded. Sure I do. Wouldn't you?
Probably.
I let go of the dog tags and moved away from the bed and checked the nightstands and the built-in counter. Nothing there. There was no phone in the room. A place like this, I figured there would be a payphone in the office. I moved past Stockton and checked the bathroom. There was a privately purchased black leather DOP kit next to the sink, zipped closed. It had the initials KRK embossed on it. I opened it up and found a toothbrush and a razor and travel-sized tubes of toothpaste and shaving soap. Nothing else. No medications, no heart prescription, no pack of condoms. I checked the closet. There was a Class A uniform in there, neatly squared away on 3 separate hangers, with the pants folded on the bar of the first and the coat next to it on the second and the shirt on the third. The tie was still inside the shirt collar. Centered above the hangers on the shelf was a field-grade officer's service cap, gold braid all over it. On one side of the cap was a folded white undershirt, and on the other side was a pair of folded white boxers. There were 2 shoes side by side on the closet floor next to a faded green canvas suit carrier, which was propped neatly against the back wall. The shoes were gleaming black and had socks rolled tight inside them. The suit carrier was a privately purchased item and had battered leather reinforcements at the stress points. It wasn't very full. You'd get the results, I said. Our pathologist would give you a copy of the report with nothing added and nothing deleted. You see anything you're not happy about, we could put the ball right back in your court, no questions asked. Stockton said nothing, but I wasn't feeling any hostility coming off him. Some town cops are okay. A big base like Byrd puts a lot of ripples into the surrounding civilian world. Therefore, MPs spend a lot of time with their civilian counterparts, and sometimes it's a pain in the ass, and sometimes it isn't. I had a feeling Stockton wasn't going to be a huge problem. He was relaxed. Bottom line, he seemed a little lazy to me, and lazy people are always happy to pass their burdens on to someone else. How much? I said.
How much what?
How much would a whore cost here?
$20 would do it. There's nothing very exotic available in this neck of the woods.
In the room?
15, probably.
I rolled the corpse back onto its front. Wasn't easy. It weighed 200 pounds at least. What do you think?
About what?
About Walter Reed doing the autopsy? There was silence for a moment. Stockton looked at the wall.
I might be acceptable, he said.
There was a knock at the open door, one of the cops from the cars.
Medical examiner just called in. He can't get here for another 2 hours at least. It's a New Year's Eve.
I smiled. Acceptable was about to change to highly desirable. 2 hours from now, Stockton would need to be somewhere else. A whole bunch of parties would be breaking up, and the roads would be mayhem. 2 hours from now, he'd be begging me to haul the old guy away. I said nothing, and the cop went back to wait in his car, and Stockton moved all the way into the room and stood facing the draped window with his back to the corpse. I took the hanger with the uniform coat on it and lifted it out of the closet and hung it on the bathroom door frame where the hallway light fell on it. Looking at a Class A coat is like reading a book or sitting next to a guy in a bar and hearing his whole life story. This one was the right size for the body on the bed, and it had Kramer on the nameplate, which matched the dog tags. It had a purple heart ribbon with two bronze oak leaf clusters to denote a second and third award of the medal, which matched the scars. It had two silver stars on the epaulettes, which confirmed he was a major general. The branch insignia on the lapels denoted armor, and the shoulder patch was from 12 Corps. Apart from that, there were a bunch of unit awards and a whole salad bowl of medal ribbons dating way back through Vietnam and Korea, some of which he had probably earned the hard way, and some of which he probably hadn't. Some of them were foreign awards, whose display was authorized but not compulsory. It was a very full coat, relatively old, well cared for, standard issue, not privately tailored. Taken as a whole, it told me he was professionally vain, but not personally vain. I went through the pockets. They were all empty, except for a key to the rental car. It was attached to a key ring in the shape of a figure one, which was made out of clear plastic and contained a slip of paper with Hertz printed in yellow at the top, and a license plate number written by hand in black ballpoint underneath. There was no wallet, no loose change. I put the coat back in the closet and checked the pants. Nothing in the pockets. I checked the shoes. Nothing in them except the socks. I checked the hat. Nothing hidden underneath it. I lifted the suit carrier out and opened it on the floor. It contained a battle dress uniform and an M43 field cap, a change of socks and underwear, and a pair of shined combat boots, plain black leather. There was an empty compartment that I figured was for the DOP kit. Nothing else. Nothing at all. I closed it up and put it back, squatted down and looked under the bed. Saw nothing.
"Anything we should worry about?"
Stockton asked. I stood up, shook my head. "No," I lied.
"Well, then you can have him. But I get a copy of the report."
"Agreed."
"Happy New Year."
We hope you enjoyed this free preview of The Enemy, Book 8 in the Jack Reacher series. To keep the story going, get the complete book today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.